They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax coming to you live from the newly gentrified Mosaic District in Fairfax County. And joining us right here amongst all the glitz and glamour and glitter and roadwork and construction debris is my old friend, Bill Davis. Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Shu. It's good to chat with you.
And one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is exactly what I opened the show with. It's the newly gentrified Mosaic District in the heart of Fairfax County, right?
The what district?
Mosaic District. When the Washington Post did an article on me back in 2001, I believe it was, so we're going back a few years, they called this a seedy industrial area.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, is that another word for blight?
It's blight, and it was a seedy industrial area. This is where all the tow truck companies brought all the cars that they had towed from HOAs and anywhere else and just dumped them, and they had these wild guard dogs and high fences and chain link. I mean, it really was. It was industrial, and it was not very nice. Well, of course, they came in, and they tore all of that out. And they're building these boxes that they're selling starting at $700,000.
Oh!
They're boxes. They're just brown boxes.
Yeah.
Really tall brown boxes. Behind them, there's a huge building that's going up. So all of this industrial area is being filled in. We're not too far from a metro station where the parking lot suddenly disappeared one day, and in it is a huge, massive apartment building right across the street. You've got all of these apartments. So this is called smart growth. It is called walkable communities. It is called metro accessible. It is called anything you want it to be called. And this is the wave of the future. Now, you've had some discussions with people who think this is just hunky-dory.
Well, I hope that they're a minority of the population. They certainly seem to be a loud, vocal minority, but in their view, this is better. It's somehow better because it creates a walkable area, and it's sustainable in some sense, and it gives a sense of community because there's always some gathering area or some commonly owned area. And by that, I don't mean owned by the citizens or owned by the local government. I mean, the local government wants nothing to do with it. They want to force that off onto somebody else, you know. There's supposed to be some area where these people are just going to mysteriously gather and create a community.
Right. You know what I miss, Bill?
What's that?
The sky.
What guy?
The sky. The blue
the sky.
The sky up above. You've got all these, and I have to say it, they are ugly.
These design, the wall-to-wall buildings? Absolutely, they're ugly.
They are ugly. They're as ugly as sin. And you have all of this construction going on, and people are just piling in on top, one on top of the other. This is supposed to be the wave of the future. This is what we allegedly want.
Well, I've watched some of these self-proclaimed urban planners, and it always It always strikes me as a little odd is these people believe that they know what's best for everybody else and that this is the way everyone should live and it's a preferred way of living for somebody, I don't know who, and they have this idea that you need to live 2 minutes from work, and I've never quite understood, you know, why is it so great to only take 2 minutes to get to some place if you can't stand it? The designs always inherently involve a decrease in private space, because it's always smaller and everything else, and an increase in junk space, this ridiculous shared space notion where it's not real. Well, I guess if it's a condo type environment, the other owners would own it, but they virtually have no control over it. But it, you know, it's to be owned or managed by some other entity, which is private. I've listened to some of these clowns describe how they also seem to be anti-car. In fact, they attack they like to attack subdivisions, you know, in other places of town as being car dependent. And I always thought that was a little odd. What, you know, car dependent? Well, isn't your walkable space foot dependent? I'm not sure I understand this this nonsense. And they're trying to create an environment where you're rail dependent, bus dependent, taxi dependent, or some other kind of dependent, and yet somehow car dependent, meaning independent. To me, that's what that means, independent, where you can do something on your own. You don't have to rely upon this, you know, all these collective type of things or things that require a collective environment to finance them or huge amounts of debt and things of that nature.
I know you live in a rural area.
Yes.
And I know you have little kids.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that they can't walk to school.
No, they cannot.
And I'm assuming that your wife, if something were to happen, your wife or you would be able to go and pick them up.
Yes.
In a car.
Yes, absolutely.
If they were sick.
Yes.
If they had a high fever.
Yes.
My daughter did when she was in third, fourth, fifth grade. She had a lot of high fevers, and I had to go and pick her up all the time. Now, I can just imagine dragging that kid through snowy streets and on ice and trying to walk to a doctor. I mean, you know, we've gone way beyond that sort of thinking or that sort of lifestyle.
You're talking about what the urbanists try to promote?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me because along your same lines, well, when you mentioned could they walk, well, they could if they started early enough. The school's about 15 miles away. So if they started early enough, I guess, you know, they could walk too, and they might not get home in time for homework, and of course there's always extracurricular events. I'm not sure how they're supposed to get to those on timely. And none of these walkable areas deal with that either, that they always like to talk about it's walkable.
Yeah.
But these folks, you know, to me it's a very elitist and condescending viewpoint, and it's all, you know, they tend to hate it when I say, wall-to-wall 30-story buildings filled with coffee shops and restaurants, because they're only interested in, they want it to be chock full of stores and retail establishments, but they're very anti-big box, as they call it. So they're still going to order that stuff online, apparently. So this is all supposed to be service type of entities that provide the services they want. So, you know, they want a coffee shop. They want a little restaurant that has the food that they want. Because to me, this walkability nonsense is, I don't understand how it's any better if you have to walk past a whole bunch of places that you weren't planning to go to anyway. And they don't like parking lots because, you know why? Because parking lots serve cars. And these people don't like cars. They don't like parking lots. And I listened to one talk about how a parking lot disturbed the urban fabric.
What?
And I thought...
A parking lot disturbs the urban fabric?
Apparently. They said it was like a missing tooth and a mouth of teeth. And I said, well, gosh, I mean, so, you know, all you want is wall-to-wall buildings. I said, maybe a parking lot is part of the urban fabric. Have you ever, you know, have you thought about changing your palette a little bit and redefining your definition of fabric? Because you know what? When you're walking down a street with, as you mentioned before, you know, you got, you can't see the sky. Well, it's no fun if you, and I don't say this trying to sound claustrophobic or anything, but you know, when you've got tall buildings on either side of you and you come across a parking lot, that's like an opening. It's like, oh my gosh, there's space. Even if it's filled with cars, there's space there. You don't have a, you know, building looming over you.
Yeah.
But somehow, it's just a bad idea to have these parking lots. And I laughed with these people because they kept talking about how it disturbed the urban, the fabric, and it disrupts the walkability. And I thought, you're walking on a sidewalk. It had nothing to do with walking. If it's a building full of stuff you weren't going to, it doesn't change the distance you're going to walk. It doesn't change where you're going to walk. So what they're really complaining about is their sense of aesthetics and, you know, their social predilections to hate cars. I mean, I don't know what else to call it, but and independence.
Well, you know, Bill, I've seen people, they're the single guys, the single young couples.
Yes.
Who like to live in downtown urban areas, and they've got the gym 35 floors below them. They've got a swimming pool on the roof, and they don't really have to go anywhere, you know. They can do whatever they want to do. And if they decide they want to go out and have a drink or go to a restaurant with their neighbors or with their friends and meet people, they can all walk down there. And that's fine and dandy. And I don't, and I think they should be able to do that.
Sure.
I'm not going to jump in and say, hey, you know, you're a little bit wacko. But realistically, that is not ideal for families.
I agree with you. And I think, again, most of these people are kind of elitist.
Yes.
I don't know if they're a particular age necessarily, but they seem to either not have any kids or never have had any kids, and they're not worried about going to school. Or, I mean, try to design one of these areas where the school's close by, the extracurricular events are going to be close by. In this, you know, I mean, it takes room put in a school and to put in fields or playing fields or recreational fields or and how about a library and these types of things. How walkable is this? I mean, I was told that my neighborhood wasn't walkable because there weren't any stores in it. Well, the nearest store is probably, if you consider the post office a store, I guess it's 6 miles away, but another store is, probably 12 to 15 miles away. And I don't need a store inside the subdivision. In fact, I would rather live about as far away from one as possible. I don't need to live next door to the grocery store. You know, I don't understand these people that insist that you have to live in that type of environment. And of course, they're all pushing mixed residential subdivisions where you're going to have mixed commercial and residential all into a private HOA-controlled subdivision, because this is, you don't see these places being built that don't have an HOA. And that's a whole other disturbing aspect of this.
Well, you know, Celebration Florida is the poster child for this thinking. It was, oh, this is Celebration Florida. Disney built it. It's absolutely wonderful. I make a point of going to Celebration every time I go down to Florida. And
right.
I go down every few years and go to the Orlando area. And here's what they're not telling you. They have schools on the property in Celebration.
Okay.
But they don't want school buses. Maybe it's just something, a machine with wheels that transports people. It just doesn't work for them. So the whole development can be no more than a mile from anywhere, because the kids in Florida, there's a rule that if the kids live more than a mile away from the school, they have to have buses.
Okay.
So they've designed it so that it's less than a mile for the kids to walk to school. Okay? Now, they don't want you getting in your car and driving to the grocery store, so they have a grocery store there. Sometimes. The problem is that the grocery store that, and I've seen two of them because I go in. The grocery store they have there, or they had, or they sometimes have, however you want to phrase it, is small. Since there is no competition, it's very expensive. You can get the basics. You can get a bag of flour and a pound of sugar or pound of butter and a bag of sugar and bread and milk and all the rest of it. But if you get into anything a little beyond that, you don't have it. And the thing is, the grocery stores just don't make it financially, even though they're more expensive, even though it costs more for everything. There's not enough income from the people who walk in,
right,
and don't drive in. And just realistically, how much are you going to buy if you have to walk a mile carrying it?
Exactly. Are they expecting little kids to walk a mile to school? I'm not sure I understand that. In all sorts of weather. I mean, you know, it does rain and lightning and all that kind of stuff in Florida.
Oh, yeah. And the rain comes pouring down.
Right. Well, from some of the things I've heard of celebration, it sounds more like the poster child for dysfunction. However, I want to correct that a little bit and say it's no different than any of these other subdivisions. They put up this, the developer puts up these symbols. They're like symbols. And because the symbol exists, the symbols of, they decide what the symbols of community and all this other, and harmony and all this other type of stuff are. And then they go plant these symbols in place artificially. And because they're there, it must be a harmonious community. And of course, it's nothing but. They focus on preserving the symbol as opposed to actually, enjoying neighbors or independence or anything like that. It's all focused on symbols.
Now they do have a lake. There are a lot of man-made lakes down there, and water just bubbles up to the top in Florida. So,
oh, yeah,
that's not a big deal. And it's pristine. I mean, the place is just absolutely beautiful. It was the first time I went there. It was the last time I went there. They have, one thing they did was instead of putting benches, they used chairs. So what's nice is, and I'm going to talk about things that are nice because it's not all bad. What's nice is that instead of having benches that are kind of dug into the ground, they have chairs. So you can go and pull a chair over and meet up with your neighbors. And I think somebody in the studio next to me is making some funny, doing some funny things.
I'm not hearing it here.
Oh, I'm hearing stuff in my, so I think it's next door. I saw someone walk into the TV studio next door. But, so if you've got friends there and you've got neighbors and friends and you can just go down and take the kids down and they have one of these springy fountains, you know, the circle thing where all of a sudden you'll get these water spouts coming up and the kids love it. I mean, they just absolutely love playing in it and all that. And they do have some restaurants around there that are okay, and, you know, you can go. But realistically, how much can you get into a square mile? And the reason they're going to keep it to a square mile is because they don't want school buses on the property.
Great.
That's, you know,
Of course, the people there are paying taxes to the school district for those school buses. So they're not getting any relief from that.
Oh, they're paying taxes, they're paying HOA dues, and they're paying CDD dues as well, because there is a CDD over there.
Great.
There is a CDD, and when I asked about it, and I said, oh, yeah, we've got a CDD, I said, can you give me any information about it? Nope.
Oh, you probably got to pay a few hundred bucks to get
You have to buy a house before they'll give you a copy of the documents.
I said, hey, I thought you knew it when you moved in. Isn't that what the industry always says? You knew it when you moved in?
Yeah, I said, can I see them at least? I'm not asking you for them. So eventually they gave me a couple of pages, and they said, here they are. I said, this is it as recorded. This is from the documents that are recorded. I said, no. I want to see the whole enchilada. And they wouldn't even show them to me. They said, buy a house and we'll give it to you. I said, well, how do I know if I want to buy a house? But they showed me the doorbell.
Well, you would have been taking it anyway if you saw those documents.
I wasn't planning on buying anything anyway. I just wanted to see what would happen. They decided she knows too much. Get her out of here. She's trouble. Get her out of here. So we're talking to Bill Davis. Bill, by the way, is an attorney who has been representing homeowners in Texas, and I'm so thrilled that you're doing that, Bill.
We are. You know, it's not a very level playing field because the industry's had the help of a senator that owned a lot of HOA management companies, and needless to say, the legislation, not only in Texas, actually, but in many other states, has been tilted heavily in favor of the industry because homeowners were going to work every day and coming home and working and didn't want to be bothered, which gave these industry trade lobby groups ample opportunity to go in and get legislation largely unopposed for, I don't know, a decade or two until...
They were relying on cars, Bill. They didn't have to walk.
Right. Right. Hey, they are HOA dependent. All these management companies and insurance companies and HOA attorneys, they're absolutely HOA dependent. I mean, my gosh, if there wasn't an HOA, they'd have to do something, you know, legitimate for their livelihood.
Gosh, that would be terrible, wouldn't it?
Oh, they might have to earn an honest living.
We can't have that. We can't have that. No, but it's not a level playing field. You're absolutely right. But it's getting to be more so with good people like you.
Well, thank you, Sue.
Who, I mean, you know what you're doing and you know this area of the law, which even when you have good non-HOA attorneys, they don't know this area of the law. They don't understand what they're getting involved in.
Right. A general practitioner, they generally have no idea that this field, you know, what these characters have been doing for the last 20 years. There's, you know, a few special provisions here, a few special provisions there, and it makes it, well, some states do have a Planned Community Act and things like that, which, of course, again, is lobbied for by the industry, but in this state, I'm glad we don't have one of those acts. And but you know, if you're just thinking that the normal nonprofit corporation code is going to cover it or something like that, it's not quite that easy.
No, it's not. And the thing is, what happens quite often, Bill, is that if you get an attorney who finds that they really can't turn down their client because they're their clients, they've been representing them for years, and now all of a sudden there's this new issue that they have to deal with. Quite often the industry attorneys will go over and say, oh, we'll help you. We'll, you know, just talk to us. We'll be happy to help you with this.
Right.
And they do. Which is bizarre and interesting and all of that. But let's get back to changing residential America by design.
Okay.
So what we're doing is, I mean, I'm seeing parking lots disappearing, literally parking lots disappearing and huge residential structures being planted in there. And little old houses on a quarter of an acre or a fifth of an acre or a third of an acre.
Well, what was that story that we were passing around? I think that was in New Jersey, where it was an establishment of 300 homes on decent-sized lots, and the city decided, well, if we declared a blight, we can go in and redevelopment and cram a whole lot more homes, and it will be a community good because it'll be a higher tax base for the city.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, a community good except for all the people that actually live in the existing community? Because they're, I mean, the pictures were terrible. I mean, the city was going in and ripping out parts of row homes. So, like, if you had row homes, there were two or three, you know, homes that shared common walls and things like that. The city would go out and take the middle one or take out two of them, leaving the whole side of a house exposed to the elements with the family still living in it. And, you know, incredible.
the abuses are incredible, and it's all follow the money. And who's going to make money out of that? It's going to be the city, the municipality, whether it's a city or, a county or a township or whatever they call themselves, and the developer.
Right.
And so you get rid of this quote-unquote blight, and you replace it with million-dollar condominiums.
I think this is fundamentally one of the problems of placing everything on aesthetics. I mean, they're rationalizing everything under the theory of aesthetics. I mean, this is kind of a Nazi mentality that, we don't like the way this looks, or we believe this is undesirable, and therefore that should justify any action we want to take. And that's embedded into virtually every one of these HOAs, you got to get permission from somebody. They can declare to make an improvement or change the paint on your house or something, as benign as that. And they have the sole and absolute discretion to declare something, nope, that's undesirable, we don't like it, or we'll fine you because that's unsightly. That's just crazy.
I've told people for years, and I'm going to repeat it, if you are fortunate enough to own property that is not part of an HOA,
yes,
for God's sakes, record something on there. Record a covenant that says it will never be part of an involuntary membership corporation. How do you like that one, Bill?
That sounds pretty good.
Involuntary membership corporation. We got to come up with something that rolls off the tongue a little better.
Involuntary membership organization. There are a few of them that are unincorporated, but, an IMO.
An IMO?
An IMO. It's an involuntary membership organization.
Sounds like an emu, which is a big, klutzy bird.
Well, they are big, klutzy things. That's
sure. Yeah, I used to call them common ownership developments until people got mad at me because they said, there's no ownership and there's nothing common about it. But I kind of like the acronym COD because there's something fishy about them.
Fishy, scaly, stinky, you name it.
If it stinks, it's got to be a cod, right?
Right. Yeah. Bottom feeder. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So we're changing the face of residential America by design. We're tearing down what was once what many people would call the American dream, the Norman Rockwell little house in the middle of a lush green lawn, surrounded by a white picket fence, and we're tearing all of these down because they're not worth anything anymore. The American dream is not worth anything. It doesn't protect your property values, Bill. So
I think freedom is a pretty valuable attribute. I've seen people go, I would never live anywhere there worse than an HOA, and I thought you are. How crazy are you? I mean, first of all, they've obviously never experienced, they probably haven't ever been threatened or had everything thrust into a lawsuit or dealt with a crooked management company. And if they have one, I don't know how they avoided that. One that was crooked. But just this idea that they actually believe, it's like a blind faith that an HOA has somehow is, preserving property values. And I mean, that's not why I bought a house. I bought a house to raise a family, and there's a sense of ownership that comes with the house. And I thought it was, you can do things with your own property. I mean, when that's taken away from you, you no longer have, the hallmarks of ownership are the right of use and enjoyment, the right to exclude others, and there's restraints against alienability, meaning that you get to sell it without someone else having restraints on that. And if you look at what an HOA does, it's eliminated virtually all the attributes of ownership. They call it ownership, but you don't get the use and enjoyment that you're supposed to have. Oh, no. They're going to tell you. A private entity is going to tell you what you can do with your property. Number two, you don't have the right to exclude others. Virtually all of these things that has come about in the last decade for sure, have provisions allowing the board or its agents or the architectural committee to enter your property without your consent at any time, under some pretense of, oh, verifying compliance with the restrictive covenants or to address a safety issue. Sure. And lastly, restraints against alienation, well, you know, they've had transfer fees and all this other nonsense that get heaped on homeowners, or in some cases they've got, oh, the HOA has a first right of refusal. In short, people are, it's really false advertising, deceptive trade practices to tell people they're buying a home, they'll own a home. Reality is they're not owners in any traditional sense of the word. And that's kind of ironic, isn't it? It's being painted as going to a traditional values and things like that. When you look at these things legally, there is nothing traditional about them at all. There's only the symbol of tradition. You know, you've got a cute little home there. You see the pretty home, but you don't see the invisible legal entanglement. And that's what makes these things really ugly places to live in.
Well, I think even people just driving through one of these subdivisions can look around, and there's this resentment and kickback from these cookie-cutter homes. People say, I don't want that. I want a house with character.
Right.
I don't want something that looks identical to every other flipping house on the street, in the neighborhood. You know, heaven forbid you should come home after a couple of drinks and enter the wrong house. It's happened.
I'm sure it has.
It has happened. They all look alike. And some people think that, there's nothing for your eye that distracts the eye. They all look the same. And some of these places, I mean, Reston is one of them. There's a place called Burke Center in Virginia as well. It's a fairly large, older subdivision. And in those places, they had these color restrictions. Everything had to be a certain color. In Burke, they actually had the paint color, the number, and where you bought it from. And I'm surprised that nobody questioned their right to free trade. And the store where you bought it, the Martin Senauer paint, was available through a store called Heckinger's that no longer exists. So how can you get Martin Senauer number whatever brown? And plus it dates, when you do that, it just absolutely dates the house. It's like when you walk into a house and you see a turquoise refrigerator sitting in the middle of the kitchen like a pimple on somebody's nose.
Right.
50s!
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, they're saying something preserves value. I've always thought that was a equivocal statement, because, first of all, it doesn't say for who. And second of all, preserving, you mean like leaving it in the same position where it can't be improved in terms of the value? And the value is to these vendors. The HOA attorneys, the HOA management companies, and these kind of clowns, the value is not to the homeowner. And they've done nothing, you know, they love to claim that it's the economy with respect to the United States on, you know, the massive decrease in home values. But I thought, well, wait a minute, so what is it when the economy is good? Are you going to tell me that it's not the economy, it's the HOA somehow, but it's the economy when things are bad, but it's the HOA when things are good? Come on, that's ridiculous. The bottom line is the HOA is not an element in helping values. I think it's an absolute detriment. And I don't see what anytime you have perpetual liens that can never be paid off for the benefit of some private organization, not a government, some private company, that's not a good thing. That's a terrible thing, and it's an infinite liability with no ascertainable benefit. Most of these places have no obligation to the homeowners or to the infrastructure. They have the right to do things. The HOA will have the power, supposedly, to do things by its documents, but it doesn't have the obligation. And so what are you paying the money for? You just have this blind obligation to pay money into these things?
Yeah. It's like a big black hole, and you just chuck money into it, and yeah, maybe some of the, you know, money fairies will come back and do something for you, but hey, you know, that's few and far between. And they don't, like you said, they don't have to do anything. Bill, what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw something out here. You and I have been talking about this. In fact, you and I sort of recently have been talking about this. And I'm going to open this up to our listeners. And if anybody has any ideas, we'd love to hear them. And there's a lot of information that's coming down from the pro-HOA people. There's a handful of us across the country that are not pro-HOA. We would like to put the issues out on the table, and that's one thing that On the Commons has been trying to do, but I think I've come to the realization that it's just not enough. And I sent you an email and I said we need to look beyond On the Commons. I mean, I'll keep On the Commons. I just renewed for another 6 months. It's my 14th year. We're not going anywhere. But does anybody have any ideas or any thoughts or anything, any way of putting the truth out there and making it more widely available?
You know, I think, are you talking about private organizations, or are you talking about governmental organizations?
I'm talking about people like you and me. And we're not the only two out there. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who believe like you and I do. I think you and I are unique in that we don't think we can fix it. We don't believe that it can be fixed.
Right.
I think most people think that, well, if you get rid of this board member, or if there's a law, or, you know.
We know that there's a lot of people that know it can't be fixed, but the way that they have been able to address it is to avoid HOAs like the plague.
Yes.
The problem is there's been fewer and fewer places for them to go to, because places that weren't HOA are being converted, not out of demand. In fact, you know, serious fights about this type of stuff, but force pressure from local government and other force and sheer trickery. That's certainly happening a lot in the Houston area. And, you know, it's very hard to avoid these places to preserve freedom. I've actually thought I don't want to sound elitist about it, but there's the people that know better, and I like to think I'm one of the people that know better when it comes to this insane belief that an HOA preserves property value. I know it doesn't. I've experienced it firsthand, and I haven't seen one single case in all the time this industry's been trying to, quote, educate people, where it can come up with any empirical data to support its proposition. The entities that have been better off have been the trade group, the management companies, the HOA attorneys, the industry banks, the industry insurance carriers, not the homeowners that live in these places. And from a governmental standpoint, and I'm sure the industry is fighting this like mad and has been for a while, you know, the Consumer Protection Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, I think it's called, that was recently formed, has taken over some responsibilities that HUD used to have. And I think it'd be good to treat these places very much like the Interstate Land Sales Act does for the federal government, where you can't sell this property as a developer without disclosing. I don't want to see exemptions under that act for what these developers are doing. You know, so if you buy a lot, in a subdivision that's going to be more than 99 lots, generally you're obligated to make certain disclosures under that act. But the way the developers get around it is, and I don't want to just pick on developers, I mean, there's builders, there's an entire real estate industry that's built up on this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why you see these master plan communities, I always laugh at that term because that always has a negative connotation. And, you know, when you're a kid watching cartoons, the master plan, that's always the bad guy that has the master plan. When you think about who was involved in the master plan, it was the developer and the local municipality. They are the bad guys as far as the homeowners are concerned. But when you look at the plan. But the HUD, and under this Interstate Land Sales Act, they had to disclose a number of things, including cost. They had to deliver property reports, a number of other things. I'd like to see all federal financing for these places shut out until they provide disclosures they don't get to charge for them either. I mean, you know, any publicly traded company out there, you can go, they freely give you their prospectus or their annual reports or, you know, these types of things. You can access them on the internet. Why, as somewhat as you experienced in Celebration, Florida with a similar district, why is this such a big secret? The industry loves to claim people knew it when they moved in, and yet why is this hide the ball or pay an inordinate amount of money to purchase you know, the financials or what the restricted covenants are or whatever resolutions, regulations, and other nonsense these things are putting on. I'd like to, for them to be held liable for not doing it. And I'd like to see federal financing cut off. And, of course, that's where probably 90% of the financing is for these HOA properties. It's all
AMA, it is.
Freddie Mac, ultimately. It's federal. And, you know, why is it that, why are they so afraid of disclosure? That's the funny thing. Why are they so panicked about disclosure?
Well, let me tell you a story. I had somebody, a proponent of HOAs, a member of the industry on the show, back when I started this show. And I remember asking him, I don't even remember who it was, but it was someone in the studio. And I said, all right, if you think that people agree to this, why not have it up front and have people sign it? Have a paper, have a page up front saying, you know, the following things. And he looked at me across the board and he said, are you crazy? Nobody would buy into it if they knew what they were getting.
And if they have a choice, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody would buy into it. That's the other thing. People, you know, if you tell people something over and over and over again, they will believe it. Whether
right.
there's any truth to it or not, they will believe it. They will not do their homework. They will not look into it. They will not dig deep to figure out what the issues and the problems are. But they will just flat out believe it. So they believe, because they've heard over and over and over and over again, that HOAs protect property values. So even though they know all of the negative stuff, they're still a little bit afraid of saying no to an HOA because they're afraid that, holy moly, if I didn't have an HOA, why, the guy across the street could put his car up on blocks. I said, yeah, he could. He could also plant some flowers in an old toilet and put it in the middle of
oh
his yard.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody wants...
But most people aren't going to do that. But, you know.
You know, we were in our litigation with the HOA. The accusation suddenly became, well, you could put up a, you know, they didn't want us to have water wells.
Mm-hmm.
And a water well is largely, it's an underground structure. And so what is the concern about what you're going to see? And so they started claiming, well, you could put up a 50-foot tall purple polka-dotted windmill. Like, well, I could build a spaceship in my backyard, too, but, I mean, you know, I don't – that doesn't justify – your, you know, irrational fear doesn't justify me ceding authority over my property to you. You know, I mean, that's just ridiculous. And most recently, you brought up something else, too, this claim of authority that they often don't have. You didn't express it that way, but that's the way I interpreted part of what you mentioned. In our subdivision, the whole subdivision, we get these, the board doesn't like to identify who the board members are.
Yes.
And it's this big secret.
Yeah.
In fact, it is. They made, and of course, the management company actually on its website claimed that it was against the law for it to give out this information, which is absolutely false. Absolutely false. But of course, the management company being the only contact between you and the board, you know, they are the epitome of the unfaithful agent. If that's the only place you can go to, who's to say when they say, well, the board disagreed?
Yeah.
You know, how are you supposed to know any better, especially when it just happens to benefit the management company? But that's a standard operating procedure for many management companies. But we get this email out of the blue. And these are not signed by anybody. They come from an email address that's supposedly used by the HOA, and of course you can't reply back to it because it's set up for no replies back. And somebody just says, "We have three or four trash services, and therefore it looks like trash day every day of the week. We've been happy with, and they name a particular garbage disposal service, and they've been using for the last year, and that's their first couple of sentences, and then they move on to state that beginning January the 1st, they dictate that everyone has to switch to this trash provider that these people are happy with, whoever they are, and anyone who doesn't will get notices of violation from the architectural committee.
Oh, really?
And that the management company will then start the, quote, fining process. I can't tell you, Shu, I can't wait to get one of those letters because I'm not going to even reply back. I'm going to file a lawsuit. I'm so sick of dealing with people that behave this way. I'm going to go after them again. And we've already drawn up, you'll laugh about this, Texas, there's a flag called the Gonzales flag. And this goes to the time of when Texas was still under the control of Mexico, really. But Gonzales is a town in South Texas. And Santa Ana, the Mexicans were concerned about the arming of Texans. And so there was a cannon that had been loaned, and it was in the city of Gonzales. And the Mexican army was going around trying to collect up guns and things like this that the villages and cities and townspeople had so that they wouldn't be armed. Well, there a flag was designed, and it was, I think it originated in Gonzales, but it has a star at the top. In the middle, it's got the symbol of a cannon, and at the bottom, it says, come and take it, which is basically, come and take it if you dare. You know, you're not taking our guns away. Well, I realize this sounds silly. But when you've dealt with years of litigation from people like this who hide behind the HOA, who seem just completely infatuated with the desire to control all their neighbors and love being able to tell other people no, as if they were children, and yet these are other adults who bought houses, who supposedly, quote, own those houses and pay taxes on those houses and everything else, but yet those people aren't allowed to make their own decisions. So we're going to be told who we can use for a trash provider. Well, we have a flag that we put together that's got the little star, and it says, come and take it at the bottom, but in the middle, it's got a trash can, just like the wheeled totes. And, you know, anybody that's familiar with Texas history, which is, you know, around here, sure, we got lots of people from other areas, but anybody that looks at that can't help but laugh, but at the same time realize that people are serious about this. I know it does sound silly, doesn't it? But it has become such a control issue. These people aren't happy unless they control every little aspect of your life.
I know. It's just incredible. I mean, they have to approve your garden hose for crying out loud.
Right, right. So we have no idea what kind of kickback that they're getting from their recommended vendor. And we're confident that there is one because that's been the history of this subdivision. Is somebody got a kickback in the water, somebody got a kickback in the propane, and they want to insist that you use their designated providers for water, propane, and apparently now trash. And, you know, it's ugly, but I'm looking forward to the next fight. The first one was a bit of a learning experience, but it was a lengthy one. And but I'm looking forward to the next one, and, you know, we'll see how long they last. The last time was about 6.5 years, and they didn't sell too many houses during that whole time. And it was all their doing, you know. They threaten, but the egos don't let them back down. No, they've got to threaten and they have to win because, gosh, if they lose, you know, the HOA attorney's got them convinced that, well, they've just, you know, they use their big stick, and if they can't win, then they won't be able to control anybody, and that's just a terrible, terrible, you know, thing for these people.
So how did property values fare while you were protecting your rights?
Oh, my gosh, people got huge reductions on their tax, on their property taxes.
Oh, that's good.
Well, it's good. It's good because
Wonderful, Billy.
It is.
Proved that they're protecting your values.
Well, for the people that wanted to stay there, that was a great thing. For the people trying to leave, it wasn't so great because they couldn't sell their houses because of the HOA, you know, and because of the litigation with the HOA. And,
but of course, it was your fault, not their fault for trampling on your rights.
Right.
It was your fault.
Right, right. Our fault. Just terrible. And, you know, something else I'd like to see is that they don't get to use insurance to fuel their litigation treasure chest. That's a huge problem in a lot of these HOAs. If the HOA sues first, what happens, at least in these industry-controlled ones, is, you know, if somebody has a decent counterclaim and they come back at it, well, all of a sudden that triggers an insurance policy to pay for the HOA's HOA attorney's litigation costs. You know, that they don't exactly have the same interest, because if they can outspend you, it's kind of like playing, well, you're not really playing poker, but it's kind of like playing poker with the bank. The bank can keep raising you because it's a bank.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll lose because they've got infinite resources. And that's what it's like frequently in these cases, unless, or in some cases, the reason that they lose is because they get to an end where they can't keep raising you. Like you get to an appellate court and then you get to another appellate court, and there's no place else for them to go. But they certainly try raising the stakes financially each and every step of the way, and these insurance, these are industry insurance. Heck, the insurance is actually, you know, in our case, the insurance is owned by the management company's parent. That's a whole other racket, but.
Yeah, we've been there.
Now, well, right, but why, as you, getting back to your original thing, why is this a preferred design for society? Why, people don't want to live in these places. I mean, we weren't asked.
No.
This is being forced upon people. I don't find anything remotely charming about it, in, you know, at all. It fails to live up to any of its claims. It doesn't live up to anybody's expectations. They are a place where resentment and jealousy and this type of stuff turns into full-scale war that is funded through corporate entities and insurance companies. And all someone was trying to do is buy a house and raise a family. I mean, you know, I thought good fences made for good neighbors, and these people don't want you to be able to...
We don't have fences. We're just going to knock them over, which means right. That we're going to have lousy neighbors.
Right.
Is that what we want? Is that where we're going with this?
Well, they want to be lousy neighbors because they don't want you to have any defensible space. It's not, you know, it's you have no private space. I'm trying to circle back to where we were earlier in this promotion of less and less private space. These designs always, you get less space that's yours or under your domain, and
we had Nick Legadon a few weeks ago.
Yes.
And he's always been concerned about this, and he made a very good case for this being a bad idea, and that ultimately we're going to pay the price for it, because by doing what we're doing and by stifling children's imagination and not and by discouraging them from playing and creating and building, because heaven forbid we should, you know, that lower property values.
Oh, or punishing them for chalk drawings, for Pete's sake.
Oh, I know. Oh,
I mean,
know.
That's going on all over the country. You know, one of my favorite management companies, there's a couple of stories of them doing that locally. You know, somehow it was treated like a felony, you know, and the parents are threatened with foreclosure and fines and all this kind of nasty threats because their child drew on the sidewalk or in their own driveway.
Yeah,
you know,
and because those drawings might offend someone. Now, a 2 or 3 year old is going to be offensive. Come on, and there was something came across my inbox, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet, where one association would not allow kids to go trick or treating.
Oh well, believe it or not, Shu, ours has done that, and we actually used to. My wife and I, we were some of the earliest people there. And we were certainly some of the earliest with children. And we used to take a tractor and a trailer, load it up with hay bales, and we, go around. And we actually had a party for our kids and their friends and things like that there. But what the HOA did is more and more the Nazi types moved in, and they really are. I don't have a better way of describing them, and I'm not the least bit apologetic for that description. I think that's very fitting for them. They didn't want to have trick-or-treaters. So what they were going to do is have prepared stops that the kids could stop at. And, for anyone who wanted to participate, they were to go to those stops and be prepared to hand out candy or, you know, treats or whatever the thing was. There's a very manufactured type of, I mean, it was just so artificial and, why would you want to be something like that? We didn't. We didn't create that. We didn't want to have anything to do with it. So we went to, you know, a regular neighborhood with friends to, take our kids trick-or-treating. And it was so much more enjoyable. The other thing was just,
it's ridiculous.
Terrible.
That sounds ridiculous. Bill, would you believe we're out of time?
No, I can't believe it.
I can't either. I always have fun talking to you. And we always have so much to talk about.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to having you back because I know you will be back.
Well, thanks. I look forward to it as well.
And thank you to all of you for joining us. And remember, if you have any thoughts and ideas of how we can take this or change it or grow it, I'd love to hear from you. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.